This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
We are delighted to welcome each of you to this, the inaugural edition of World Lutheran News Digest. This is Pastor Rod Zwanitzer, Director of Broadcast Services for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. World Lutheran News Digest is meant to provide you with an on-air magazine of what is going on in the Confessional Lutheran Church globally, particularly and primarily the proclamation of the precious gospel of Christ to and for the nations. What can you expect? Expect an around-the-world review of Lutheran news headlines, followed by developed main stories, and even the occasional chance for Lutherans to Laugh segment. So listen, enjoy, and let us hear what you think.
Each week, we will present a brief view of Lutheran news in the fast track. An in-depth look into stories of interest will follow. In each edition, we will add a range of features that will make you laugh, cry, think, but most importantly, pray.
Coming up today, hear the story of one woman and her roller coaster of emotions as the result of an abortion.
And now, today's Fast Track, a look at Lutheranism this week.
The head of the India Evangelical Lutheran Church, Reverend J. Samuel, has officially stepped down from his position as the president of the IELC. The announcement coincided with his 65th birthday. While leading the India Evangelical Lutheran Church, President Samuel had been seeking the building of a Lutheran organization that related better to the doctrinal upholdings of the IELC than that of the Lutheran World Federation, according to the Reverend Darren Storkson, the head of Oceania and Southeast Asia for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Alternative that would maintain confessional Lutheran theology, and that his church and many other partner churches would most likely shift then from the LWF to this new organization if it existed.
The interim position of president of the IELC was taken by its vice president, Pastor Crispin. The India Evangelical Lutheran Church will have its next election later in 2013.
2 months after Hurricane Superstorm Sandy hit the east coast of the United States, the cleanup continues. But winter weather is also holding progress back just a bit. Members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Disaster Response Ministry say the need to help individuals has not lessened in some of the harder hit communities. That means the need for donations to help those victims has not gone down either. For those who have the compassion to help, donations are taken securely online through the Disaster Response Ministry page, www.lcms.org/givenow/disaster.
Religious leaders are concerned that lawmakers in the capital of Illinois in the United States will enact legislation to legalize same-sex marriage, thus causing church and religious bodies and various associated groups some headaches regarding who is able to regulate their own facilities in situations of hall rentals and possibly cause other infringements. Reverend Timothy Shart stresses that such legislation is more than merely an issue of civil rights.
It's really becoming an infringement upon the practice of religion within our state. There seems to be a change of definition from freedom of religion to freedom of worship. And there's a big difference there because freedom of worship is contained in freedom of religion, but freedom of religion is not contained in freedom of worship. And here's why. Freedom of worship means we can gather together within our buildings and locations to serve the Lord, receive His gifts, and be His people. But it does not allow us to go out into the public square, into our vocations, into our daily activities, and bring that same faith in an active way to other people. That could be curtailed under a freedom of worship versus a freedom of religion.
Shar and the other leaders involved suggest that residents contact their local lawmakers to let them know how they see the issue.
The Association of Lutheran Mission Agencies, or ALMA, is having an upcoming conference to help the various agencies network. The association, which began in 1996 with 10 agencies, has now expanded to more than 75 mission groups. Mission agencies involved in ALMA's upcoming conference, January 31st and February 1st, will have a chance to learn from the mission director of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Reverend Gregory Williamson. For directors who may want more information about becoming a member of the Association of Lutheran Mission Agencies, their website is alma-online.org.
Over 90 different college and university campus students recently attended a Lutheran conference for aiding in the renewal of campus ministry in the United States, aimed at helping the students who want to learn more about their confessional Lutheran faith and growing in their spiritual walk with Jesus. Marcus Zill is the campus pastor at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church in Laramie, Wyoming.
We had students from four-year universities, private colleges, quite a few from community colleges. The students that attended UNWRAP are interested in learning and growing in the faith and defending their faith. However, they're also very much interested in serving the church and serving their neighbors.
Some of the sessions included discussions and learning about apologetics, the joy of being single, how to witness to atheists, introduction to Buddhism, and how to witness to Buddhists. The students involved are well-schooled.
These college students take high-level classes in engineering and accounting and chemistry and calculus, and they are ready to have their Lutheran theology directly engage them where they're at, so at a level that they can dialogue with those on their college campuses.
There are more campus ministry conferences being planned in the United States.
Missionary work is one of the most rewarding experiences in the lives of many Lutheran families around the world. In the case of the Good News Lutheran Church in Papua New Guinea, the rewards have been shared for around 65 years. On a recent trip to that country, Reverend Dr. Al Culver learned of the impact of that seed of faith, which began with the work of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod missionary Reverend Otto Hinsey, whose 9 years at the beginning of the outreach to the citizens of Papua New Guinea fostered a grateful partnership.
Many of the Anga people are Lutheran. About 20% of the entire population of Papua New Guinea is Lutheran. Up in the Anga Highlands, there's at least a 60-some-year tradition of being Lutheran, and the Good News Lutheran Church feels a great debt to the Missouri Synod for bringing the gospel to them.
Reverend John Mell accompanied Dr. Culver on the trip. You can find pictures and stories from their trip online, wmltblog.org/author/ACOLLVER. Culver adds that after making mission trips to the country several times, there is great potential for the gospel to be spread throughout Papua New Guinea.
Confessional Lutheranism in Germany is getting stronger in the 21st century. Members of an association of Lutheran church bodies, including the SELC, Independent Evangelical Lutheran Church in Germany, and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in the United States, as well as Concordia Publishing House, are uniting on a part of Reformation history that is coming to life 500 years after Martin Luther walked its grounds and hallowed halls. It's known as the Wittenberg Project and includes the Martin Luther Experience as part of a multimedia facility in a building where Luther once taught. The latest meeting of the group members committed to the Wittenberg Project is promising, according to Ulrich Schrader, a member of the SELC, or Independent Lutheran Church, in Germany. Schrader is a prominent businessman from Dresden and says the latest gathering shows the project is quickly moving forward.
Various ideas that are now being finalized to have very interesting offerings at the Wittenberg facility for students, for young people, for elderly people. The ideas that are beginning to take shape there were very impressive indeed.
Schrader says the business plan that has been put on the table may include a local Wittenberg business, an addition that the managers believe can be fruitful. According to Schrader, funding for the Wittenberg project is about one quarter of the way to its goal. There is online information readily available, according to Reverend Michael Kumm, who is the chairman of the entity spearheading the Wittenberg project.
TheWittenbergProject.org, all one word, no spaces. Go to there and you can check out the diagrams for the building. You see some pictures of the building and a little information about the project. If you have any questions, there's a place that will give you contact information to give us a holler.
Experts say the MLE will draw visitors from Germany, Europe, and the entire world, especially as 2017 and the 500th anniversary of the Reformation draw closer.
And the United States Supreme Court decision known as Roe v. Wade came down 40 years ago, legalizing abortion. Since 1974, a response, the March for Life, has taken place in Washington, D.C., with an estimated 400,000 attending the march and rally each of the past 2 years. Reverend Christopher Esgett is the pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Alexandria, Virginia, USA. He says the march has been growing.
I'm always just amazed at what I see out there. There are massive amounts of youth. The pro-life movement is very young. The huge student groups and It's really remarkable how enthused they are. They are singing, they are chanting, they are vibrant. They're really excited to be out there, and it's very positive.
As Getz says, Lutherans who have never attended the March for Life should make plans to become part of the rally in 2014. As Getz adds that he believes abortion is the civil rights issue of our day.
This is World Lutheran News Digest.
It's been no ordinary week in Washington, D.C., as an estimated 400,000-plus people have commemorated a solemn occasion. January 22nd marked the 40th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's 1973 Roe v. Wade decision, which legalized abortion in the United States.
The National March for Life takes place annually on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., protesting the United States Supreme Court's decision. Lutherans have marked this milestone event by not only participating in the march, but by holding the first-ever Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Life Conference. The message is loud and clear. The message that it's time to give the innocent babies a chance at life, even if it be an inconvenience. Maggie Carner, the Director of Life and Health Ministries for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, explains both the LCMS Life Conference and the March for Life.
Well, this is actually the first ever LCMS conference on life. There have been great Christian conferences on pro-life issues and through Lutherans for Life over the years. But this is the first one that's ever been actually sponsored by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And it's important to recognize this is the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. So this is a very appropriate year to hold this conference. It's 2 days jam-packed around three areas. One is education, one is activism, and advocacy. And so we will be marching in the National March for Life, which happens annually every year. And if you've never been to anything like that, it is something you'll never forget. And it's an important demonstration to our legislators and leaders in Washington.
Unlike countless other rallies at the United States Capitol, there is something different about March for Life.
And the one thing that makes this march unique every year is that it's the only march on the Mall that happens annually every year. There are lots of demonstrations on the National Mall, but none of them, except the National March for Life, happen annually every year. So every year, the town kind of shuts down, the police are brought out, and the legislators take notice. They know that this is the only one that people are committed to doing every year because the topic is so critical to us.
In what is described as a sea of people, many who attended the event shared similar thoughts about abortion.
And our generation is committed to ending abortion in our country so that we can protect every human life, even the smallest. There's no better movement to be part of because we're fighting for what's most important to human life. And we're fighting at a time when human life is most under crisis. And so history is in the making here, and lives can be saved. We can make a difference in our nation, and we have to. So it's just awesome to be here.
Lutherans for Life is an organization that believes the church is compelled by God's word to speak and act on behalf of those who are vulnerable and defenseless. He discusses this crisis of our time.
There's a focus that we have at Lutherans for Life that looks at the tragedy, the great Herod tragedy, when he wanted to kill Jesus and had all the baby boys in Bethlehem in the area killed. And certainly that's a great tragedy in that text, and one could very easily parallel that to the great tragedy of abortion that happens 3,200 times every day in our country.
A few of the many events of the week included a national memorial for the preborn and their parents, a Lutherans for Life divine service, and a national prayer service, all in connection with the march. With so much going on concerning one issue, the question arises, if it is noted and considered by the leaders of the nation. Maggie Carner responds.
I have a friend that works on the Hill, and I asked her one year, I said, does this really make a difference? Does anybody pay attention? She goes, oh, you bet. They absolutely do. Everybody knows, and they have to rearrange how they travel into the city. Everybody knows that this is the big march every year. So it really does make an impact on the Hill. So it's really a neat day, and it's a way to really say, yep, I stand with these people, and I care about this issue. It's critical to our country. It's critical to the next generation, and we've got to do something about it.
Open to the public, the LCMS Life Conference will equip individuals, groups, and congregations to conduct pro-life advocacy at the local, state, and national levels, and to discuss theological motivation, encouragement, and practical suggestions for becoming more active in the public arena. One in attendance is involved for a very personal reason.
My birth mother was abducted by a serial rapist. This is before Roe v. Wade, so I was legally protected, and these pro-life people, activists, legislators were my heroes. I owe my life to them, and so that's why I'm here. I hope to do the same for others.
While official numbers are still being tallied, the 2013 March for Life is said to have been the largest march thus far, exceeding the 400,000 mark. The overall goal of March for Life is to overturn the Roe v. Wade decision, and strength in numbers is definitely in the favor of those in attendance.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. ഇത് ലോക ലൂത്രൻ വാർത്താ പരിപാടിയാകുന്നു.
The events of the week in Washington, D.C. are centered on preventing future abortions. But what about the women who've already had abortions? Here is WLN's Liz Hoffman.
There are over 50 million post-abortive women, many who try to forget and rationalize their decision, but they still struggle to cope with everyday life and continue to repress very painful memories. Millions wish they could undo their abortion and choose life, feeling as if there is no comfort or forgiveness. Jean Amundson was one of those women, and she shares her story.
I was 32 years old, and we had an 8-year-old and a 3-year-old. And lo and behold, in early 1980, we discovered we were expecting our third child. And this was unexpected, as we thought we were pretty much done with having, you know, our family complete. And I will say that neither one of us was real excited at first, but I was kind of excited after a time, but my ex-husband definitely did not want the child and kept telling me that. And he said, if you have this baby, I will leave you.
Jean was a stay-at-home mom and had been a Lutheran Christian since birth. She knew that terminating the pregnancy was wrong.
I was afraid because he was our sole support, and having to start all over again with two young children and no family near us was kind of frightening. And so I felt kind of alone, even though my church I knew would be very supportive, but I still felt alone.
It was getting closer to the end of the first trimester, and Jean kept dragging her feet to proceed, praying that her husband would change his mind.
One day he came home and he said, I've made an appointment for you for the abortion. And rather than choosing life, I gave in to his constant encouragement that we abort the child, and so we had the abortion.
Jean soon found out having the abortion did not save her marriage.
That was in February of 1980, and then he moved out in April of 1980. So he didn't stay. He went ahead and left and filed for divorce, and in July of 1980, we were divorced. And so rather than trusting God, I trusted man, and experienced something that was very traumatic.
After her husband left, Jean went into a deep depression. She had to keep herself together and get a job to raise the two children.
And I kept my abortion a secret until I met my my current husband. We've been married for over 27 years, a good Lutheran Christian man. And early in the relationship, he made a comment one night that he said, you know, you're the most wonderful Christian woman I've ever met. And I just sat there a minute while I decided, do I tell him my deep, dark secret, or do I just act like everything's okay? And I decided to tell him, because if the relationship was going to end, it needed to end early rather than be married or something and then find out. And then he would decide he didn't want this wonderful Christian woman who wasn't so wonderful. So then I told him, I said, well, I'm not as wonderful as you think, and then told him what had happened.
Jean was surprised that she wasn't rejected, and she got the support that she desperately needed.
He just was more supportive and said, I'm so sorry you went through this. Actually, at that time, he was my elder, And he just said, I was your elder and you didn't come to me. And I said, no, I didn't go to anybody at church. I was ashamed. You know, they looked at me as this wonderful Christian lady, and I was afraid they'd see me as a bad person, and I didn't want to be seen that way. And he said, well, I don't think we would have judged you that way.
Sometime later, Jean discovered an article in her Lutheran Witness magazine that would lead her to comfort and forgiveness.
And it was on post-abortion syndrome. And I read that, and I took it to my husband, and I said, this is what's wrong with me. And then I realized that I had something, and other women felt like I did, and I wasn't alone. And then shortly after that, I went to my husband and said, we need to go talk to our pastor, and I need to confess this sin. I can't keep going on like I am. And so we did that, and then the pastor's wife was there, too. I asked that she be there, and she put me in touch with someone in a city near where we were who was dealing with post-abortive women. And I went to her and worked through the forgiveness so that I could move on. I needed to feel that I was completely forgiven.
Jean started a post-abortion syndrome recovery class.
God can take something that seems really bad and turn it into something good. And I now help other women who are dealing with post-abortion syndrome. For some people, knowing that they're on a telephone talking to somebody they don't even know is safer than going like to a pregnancy center in a town where someone might see them. And a lot of women, even Christian women, they don't want to go to their pastors or talk to someone in their church because they are afraid it's the unforgivable sin and people might really judge them in a very negative light rather than knowing you really should reach out to your pastors and others in your congregation who've gone through something similar.
Reverend Dr. James Lamb, the executive director of Lutherans for Life, gives Jean and the countless other post-abortive women a message of forgiveness.
Many women feel, that's the key word, is feel. They feel like this is an unforgivable sin, but there are no unforgivable sins. Scriptures talks about, though your sins be as scarlet, and we're talking here, you know, deep sin, though they be scarlet, they will be white as snow. So you have this wonderful contrast. And sin, in God's eyes, of course, we all know sin is sin, but dealing with sins of abortion are more difficult because of their nature. So even though a woman, she might be a Christian, she might say, yes, I know Jesus has forgiven my sins, I just don't feel forgiven. Well, that's okay, because forgiveness doesn't depend upon how we feel it. It's an objective reality purchased through the blood of Christ on the cross.
This is where hope is found. Jean often refers people to the organization Word of Hope.
We have this wonderful resource called Word of Hope, and you can pick up the telephone and dial that 800 number and just talk to someone.
And the number for Word of Hope is 888-217-8679. Word of Hope will help in processing the fear, anger, sadness, and guilt surrounding one's abortion experience. They will also help in the grieving process and will show a post-abortive woman or others involved in the decision how to come to peace with God. That number again is 888-217-8679, or simply go to word-of-hope.org.
A shock and a surprise.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
A shocking thing happened recently, a United Nations conference that did not advocate abortion. Attendees at the Rio Plus 20 UN conference rejected the inclusion of pro-abortion language in the conference's final document. The surprising thing is that America was the primary country to criticize this. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton complained that the document did not adequately support what she called reproductive rights. It is a sad commentary that when it comes to protecting unborn human life, countries such as Syria, Russia, and Egypt got it right. But the United States did not.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
World Lutheran News Digest is produced with an eye on the confessional Lutheran. These church bodies around the world proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ. And our hope is to bring the stories from these Lutheran synods, church bodies, ministries and missionaries, congregations, pastors, lay leaders, men, women, children, and persons from all walks of life to you on the internet, radio stations, smartphones, and other emerging technologies. You can help us with your support. Today we ask you to tell others, be it a family member, friend, lay leader, pastor, bishop, musician, singer, and Christians, especially other Lutherans, about World Lutheran News Digest. If that's too much to remember, think about it as WLN Digest. Our staff includes co-host, co-producer Liz Hoffman, as well as reporter-announcer Kip Allen, along with our advisor, Reverend Rod Zwanitzer. We acknowledge our support staff, including Gary Duncan, Joni Harwell, Mary Schmidt, Jenny Williams, Sydney Kendall, John Powers, Roland Lettner, and Pastor Randy Asbury. WLN Digest would like to give special thanks to the Office of the President of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Listen each week as the guests in our stories reveal what you may not have heard in the world of Lutheranism. I'm Buzz Ulrich. Thank you for listening, and may the peace of Christ be in your heart and mind this week and always.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, write to WLN Digest, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri 63105, or email news@kfuo.org.